Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are going to continue working our way through the JCAM. We are finally on to section 41.3, Miscellaneous Provisions, and this is the one that I've been waiting for because it has so much fascinating information about the way we do our jobs and our rights as carriers. So I already know in advance I'm only going to do Article 41.3 today. It's about 12 pages in the JCAM, and I just want to get through all this. We're so close to the end of the JCAM, so even though I already recorded another episode today, my LMOU episode, I'm going to push through this and try to get this knocked out. And then hopefully, we'll see. Anyway, 41.3.A, Section 3, Miscellaneous Provisions. A. The carrier may use stools while casing mail and performing other office duties, provided the use of such stools does not interfere with or affect efficiency and standard job performance. B. The employer will not assess or hold a carrier responsible for incorrect fees collected on mail improperly rated prior to being distributed to the carrier, who is expected to exercise reasonable care and judgment in the matter. C. The employer will not assess or hold a carrier responsible for faulty checks accepted in payment for postal fees or postal charges, provided the carrier follows regulations governing the acceptance of checks. The regulations governing the acceptance of checks are contained in Chapter 3 of Handbook F1. However, it is local management's responsibility to ensure that the letter carriers are trained in the procedure for properly accepting a check for postal fees and/or services. D. The union has the right to appeal the granting of an exception to the 52 calendar day period to make route adjustments pursuant to Section 211.3 of the M39 directly to Step B of the grievance procedure. Such appeal must be made within 14 days of receipt of the written notification. Article 41.3.D provides that the union may appeal the granting of an exception to the 52 calendar day period to make route adjustments pursuant to Section 211.3 of the M39 directly to Step B of the grievance procedure. However, if a grievance concerning the granting of an exception is filed at informal or formal Step A instead, it is not procedurally defective for that reason. This section was added to the 2001 National Agreement to incorporate a prior agreement on this issue into the contract in a manner consistent with the revised provisions of Article 15. In accordance with M39 Section 211.3, Adjustment of Routes, if needed as a result of either management-initiated or employee-initiated inspections, must be made within 52 days of the completion of the mail count unless an exception is approved by the district manager. 211.3. In selecting the count period, remember that all route adjustments must be placed in effect within 52 calendar days of the completion of the mail count, and no major scheme changes should be made between the period November 15th and January 1. Exceptions must be approved by the district manager. The local union will be notified promptly of any exceptions granted. These provisions are addressed in the following Memorandum of Understanding, dated July 21st, 1987. And here is that memo regarding special count and inspection city delivery routes. The United States Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO, agree that it is in the best interest of the Postal Service for letter carrier routes to be in proper adjustment. Therefore, where the regular carrier has requested a special mail count and inspection, the criteria set forth in Part 271G of the Methods Handbook, M39, have been met. And the criteria set forth in that handbook have been met. Such inspection must be completed within 4 weeks of the request and shall not be delayed. If the results of the inspection indicate that the route is to be adjusted, such adjustment must be placed into effect within 52 calendar days of the completion of the mail count in accordance with Section 211.3 of the M39 Methods Handbook. Exceptions may be granted by a division general manager only when warranted by valid operational circumstances, substantiated by a detailed written statement, which shall be submitted to the local union within 7 days of the grant of the exception. The union shall then have the right to appeal the granting of the exception directly to Step 3 of the grievance procedure within 14 days, dated July 21st, 1987. Exceptions may be granted by the district manager when warranted by valid operational circumstances. In such cases, management must provide the local union a detailed written statement substantiating the circumstances. The parties have not defined what constitutes valid operational circumstances. Challenges to the basis for granting extensions should be considered on a case-by-case basis on individual merits. The union may appeal the granting of an extension to Step B within 14 days of the notification of the extension. 41.3.E. E. When an employer requires the use of certain supply items for the performance of a carrier's functions, such items will be supplied by the employer. F. A newly appointed carrier or a carrier permanently assigned to a route with which the carrier is not familiar will be allowed a reasonable period to become familiar with the route and to become proficient. G. The employer will advise a carrier who has properly submitted a carrier auxiliary control form 3996 of the disposition of the request promptly after review of the circumstances at the time. Upon request, a duplicate copy of the completed form 3996 and form 1571, report of undelivered mail, etc., will be provided the carrier. If, while in the normal course of picking up DPS mail, a letter carrier determines the need to file a request for overtime or auxiliary assistance, or to amend a request that was previously filed, the carrier may do so at that time. The supervisor will advise the letter carrier of the disposition of the request or amended request promptly after the review of the circumstances. This does not apply if the local parties have agreed upon a practice where the letter carrier has access to their DPS mail prior to filling out the request for overtime / auxiliary assistance. And there's a citation here. 41.3.H. The Postal Service recognizes that representatives of the NALC should be permitted to use available telephones. Accordingly, the employer at the local level shall establish a reasonable policy regarding the use of telephones by authorized union officials and stewards for calls relating to the administration of the national agreement. The policy will be made known to the president of the NALC branch. 41.3.I. Carriers shall not finger mail when driving, or when walking up or down steps or curbs, when crossing streets, or at any time it would create a safety hazard to the carriers or the public. Consistent with the efficiency of the operation, mail shall be placed in the delivery sequence in a bundle during strapping out. The employer shall not be required to conduct a special count or route inspection as a result of this agreement. Although there have been no significant Step 4 settlements or arbitration awards interpreting Article 41.3.I, it is wise to bear in mind how arbitrators have generally approached the question of whether employees are justified for refusing to work in a particular place or in a particular fashion because of what the employee believes are unsafe conditions. First, there is the, quote, iron rule, end quote, stating that an employee must, quote, obey now and grieve later, end quote. Second, there is a narrow exception to that rule, which permits an employee to disobey where he or she has a reasonable good faith belief that to obey would cause imminent danger to life or limb. A mere belief that a safety hazard exists is usually insufficient reason to disobey an order. 41.3.J. The employer agrees that, except in matters where there is reasonable cause to suspect criminal activity, postal management or inspector shall not inspect lockers unless the employee or the union representative has been given the opportunity to be present. For a general inspection, in which a number of lockers are to be inspected, where employees have had prior notification of at least a week, the above is not applicable. K. Supervisors shall not require nor permit employees to work off the clock. Rest breaks. National Arbitrator Britton ruled that Postal Service must ensure that all employees stop working during an office break. Contractual breaks must be observed and cannot be waived by employees. And there's a citation. 41.3.L. In the interest of safety and health and other appropriate considerations, representatives designated by the NALC will be given an opportunity to examine, comment, and to submit recommendations on new vehicle specifications during their development and before the specifications are transmitted to potential contractors before manufacturing and upon completion of vehicles. M. The NALC will be informed concerning changes in existing regulations relating to the duties and functions of city letter carriers. Further, it is agreed that when changes of a substantive nature are made, they will only be made in accordance with the contractual obligations already binding upon the parties under Article 34, work and/or time standards. N, letter carriers may cross lawns while making deliveries if customers do not object and there are no particular hazards to the carrier. Lawn crossing. Although in his Cincinnati lawn crossing decision, there's a citation here, national arbitrator Sylvester Garrett did not set down clear standards for determining when customers have objected to carriers crossing their lawns and when hazards exist which would make crossing lawns unsafe. Garrett did set down the following general guidelines. 1. A carrier may be instructed broadly to take all obvious shortcuts and to cross all lawns where there is no reason to believe the customer may object. However, the determination of what constitutes an obvious shortcut or whether a hazard exists is made in the first instance by the carrier. The carrier's judgment can be exercised only in the light of the specific conditions at the location involved. 2. A supervisor may conclude, after personal observation and discussion with the carrier, that a particular lawn should be crossed and order the carrier to cross the lawn. The carrier may not ignore such an order with impunity. His remedy is to file a grievance. However, discipline should not be imposed upon a carrier who has exercised his discretion and not crossed lawns merely because the supervisor later decides that some of the lawns could have been crossed. 3. The only proper instruction before and during route inspection is that the carrier deliver the route, quote, in exactly the same manner as he does throughout the year, end quote. During the route inspection, the examiner observes but does not supervise. Therefore, quote, a carrier cannot be directed on the day of a route inspection to take any shortcuts which the carrier does not use throughout the year, end quote. 41.3.0. The following provisions without modification shall be made a part of the local agreement when requested by the local branch of the NALC during the period of local implementation, provided, however, that the local branch may, on a one-time basis during the life of this agreement, elect to delete the provision from its local agreement. Quote, when a letter carrier or full-time duty assignment, other than the letter carrier route or full-time duty assignment of the junior employee, is abolished at a delivery unit as a result of, but not limited to, route adjustments, highway, housing projects, all routes and full-time duty assignments at that unit held by letter carriers who are junior to the carrier whose route or duty assignment was abolished shall be posted for bid in accordance with the posting procedures in this article. End quote. That provision may, at the local NALC branch's request during local implementation, be made applicable, including the right to delete it, to selected delivery units within an installation. For purposes of applying that provision, a delivery unit shall be a postal station, branch, or zip code area. Any letter carrier in a higher-level craft position who loses his or her duty assignment due solely to the implementation of that provision shall be entitled to the protected salary rate provision, Article 9, Section 6 of this agreement. Branch option on Article 41, Section 3.0. If a branch's option to insert or not insert the Article 41.3.0 language in its LMOU, it is a branch's option to insert or not insert during local implementation. Management may not refuse the branch's request to insert the language during local implementation. The branch also may change its mind and, once during the term of the national agreement, elect to delete the provision from the LMOU. The protected salary rate provisions are currently found in Article 9.6. National Arbitrator Briggs held in blah 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 that a route change of greater than 50% does not constitute an abolishment under Article 41.3.0 of the National Agreement. This rule does not negate the provisions of Article 30.C or Article 30 Memorandum, which addresses existing LMOU provisions. See JCAM pages 30-4 and 30-6. National Arbitrator Snow held that when routes are posted under the provisions of Article 41.3.0, it must be done, quote, in accordance with the posting procedures in this article, end quote. And there's a citation. This reference is to Article 41.1.B.2, which provides that posting shall be installation-wide unless the LMOU or established past practice provides otherwise. Thus, if a branch has installation-wide bidding for vacant or newly created duty assignments, then all assignments in the affected carrier's delivery unit which are junior to that carrier's assignment must be posted for bid on an installation-wide basis. Incumbent letter carriers retain their assignments unless and until displaced by another letter carrier as a result of the bidding process. An exception to this rule occurs if a branch has defined separate sections for accessing purposes, and if an employee has been accessed from the section under the provisions of Article 12.5.C.4. Since Article 12.5.C.4C provides the reassigned employee with retreat rights in such cases, as long as an employee has such retreat rights to the section, bidding under the provisions of Article 41.3.0 is also limited to employees from the section at the same salary level as the vacancy. Carrier technician assignments. In a national level settlement, here's the citation, the parties agreed that if a local memorandum of understanding contains the Article 41.3.0 language and changes in T6 carrier technician strings are so great that the assignments are abolished, they should be reposted in accordance with Article 41.3.0. If a local memorandum of understanding does not contain 41.3.0 language, reposting is not required. Changing one route in a T6 string is not a cause for reposting, regardless of local memorandum of understanding provisions. The parties have agreed that carrier technician positions should be included in postings under Article 41.3.0. And there's another citation. VOMA positions not included. The vehicle operations maintenance assistant positions are multi-craft positions. The abolishment of a VOMA position does not trigger the provisions of Article 41.3.0, nor are VOMA positions included when assignments are posted under Article 41.3.0. Excessing. In accordance with the Memorandum of Understanding regarding involuntarily reassignment without regard to level, quote, withheld residual duty assignments that would be part of an Article 41.3.0 posting if the positions were occupied will be made available for selection during the 41.3.0 bidding process, unless such withheld residual assignments had already been selected by or assigned to an employee subject to involuntary or a senior in lieu of a junior reassignment pursuant to Article 12, end quote. The entire text of this MOU can be found on JCAM page 12-21. If Article 41.3.0 is triggered in a unit where full-time employees have received advance notice of the date of excessing, such employees have the right to participate in the bidding under Article 41.3.0 until the excessing actually occurs. However, if an employee is actually excessed prior to the closing date of the posting, the bid is void. 41.3.P. The employer shall promptly notify the local union president of any job-related vehicle accidents involving city letter carriers. Q. The employer agrees to continue efforts to improve the comfort and temperature level in postal vehicles. All right, I got to pause here. Let's read that again. 41.3.Q. The employer agrees to continue efforts to improve the comfort and temperature level in postal vehicles. What form is this effort taking? Like, I understand the new vehicles that we're getting are supposed to have air conditioning in them, but, what has been done to improve the comfort level inside LLVs? Like, in the summer, I turn that dial all the way to cold, and it does not blow cold. It is anything but cold. So, I don't know. Like, well, just because it's in the contract doesn't mean they're going to do it. So hopefully when we get the new vehicles, at least those will have air conditioning. All right, moving on. R. A seasonal route is a route on which the weekly hours of required service are substantially increased as a result of an increase in the number of customers served during a specific period each year. These routes are generally located in resort or vacation areas. The following steps will be taken in regard to the service of those routes during the abnormal period or periods. A. The duration of the seasonal period shall be determined by management after discussion with the local union. B. During those periods, auxiliary assistance, if requested, shall be provided to the maximum extent possible. 41.3.S. City letter carrier mail counts and route inspections and adjustments shall be conducted in accordance with the Methods Handbook M39, Management of Delivery Services, as modified by the party's Memorandum of Understanding dated July 21st, 1981 and October 22, 1984, incorporated into the December 24, 1984 award. Article 41.3.S requires that city letter carrier routes be inspected and adjusted in accordance with the Methods Handbook M39. The memorandums of understanding referenced in this section have been incorporated into the current versions of the M39 and thus no longer appear in the printed version of the contract. Oh, good, that means we don't have to read them. Special route inspections. These are governed by the provisions of M39 Section 270, reprinted below. 270, special route inspections. 271, when required. Special route inspections may be required when one or more of the following conditions or circumstances is present. A. Consistent use of overtime or auxiliary assistance. When the X route process is utilized, routes may be built up no more than 8 hours and 20 minutes during the interim period. See Memorandum of Understanding dated September 17, 1992. B. Excessive undertime. C. New construction or demolition which has resulted in appreciable change in the route. D. A simple adjustment to a route cannot be made. E. A carrier requests special inspection and it is warranted. F. Carrier consistently leaves and or returns late. G. If over any 6 consecutive week period, where work performance is otherwise satisfactory, a route shows over 30 minutes of overtime or auxiliary assistance on each of 3 days or more in each week during this period. The regular carrier assigned to such route shall, upon request, receive a special mail count and inspection to be completed within 4 weeks of the request. The month of December must be excluded from consideration when determining a 6 consecutive week period. However, if a period of overtime and or auxiliary assistance begins in November and continues into January, then January is considered as a consecutive period even though December is omitted. A new 6-week consecutive period is not begun. H. Mail shall not be curtailed for the sole purpose of avoiding the need for special mail counts and inspections. 272. Manner in which conducted. When special inspections are made because of conditions mentioned in 271, they must be conducted in the same manner as the formal count and inspection. Management-initiated regular or special route inspections are conducted between the first week of September and May 31st, excluding December. Employee-initiated special inspections conducted pursuant to Section 271.G of the M39 must be completed within 4 weeks of the request for a route that qualifies, even if the inspection has to be conducted during the months of June, July, or August. Then there's a citation. Neither management-initiated nor employee-initiated route inspections are conducted during the month of December. The special route inspections provided for in this section are conducted in exactly the same manner as regular counts and inspections. To qualify for a special route inspection, a route must show over 30 minutes of overtime or auxiliary assistance on each of 3 days or more in each of 6 consecutive weeks. The month of December is excluded from this 6 consecutive week period. Only the incumbent letter carrier on a route may make a request for a special route inspection under the provisions of M39 Section 271.G. The carrier technician or a letter carrier who has opted on a route, or the union, for example, may not make the request. The provisions of Section 271 refer to the route and not the carrier on the route, despite the fact that the purpose of any such inspection is to adjust the route to the individual carrier. Thus, the fact that the regular carrier on a route may have been absent for part of the 6-week period is not a factor in determining whether a route qualifies for a special inspection. And there are multiple citations here. Once a route qualifies and the incumbent requests a special route inspection, it cannot be avoided by unilaterally providing relief or making an adjustment. Special route inspections are not unit and route reviews. The right to a special route inspection is unaffected by the fact that the office involved may be undergoing or be scheduled for a unit and route review. Time limits. The time limit for initiating an informal Step A dispute over the denial of a request for a special route inspection begins on the day the request is denied, or on the last day the inspection could be started to comply with M39 Section 271.G, whichever comes first. The time limit for initiating an informal Step A dispute does not begin at the end of the 6-week qualifying period unless that is the date the request was denied. And there are citations here. Performance deficiency should be addressed in a timely manner. Once the request is made by the incumbent letter carrier, management should not try to avoid conducting the special route inspection by attempting to identify performance deficiencies after the fact. Unsatisfactory performance can be a reason for denying a special route inspection if reasonable efforts toward improving performance to a satisfactory level have not been successful and the reasons have been documented and discussed with the carrier during the 6 weeks period. Additionally, quote, unsatisfactory conditions such as poor case labels, poor work methods, or no route examiners available should not be used as an excuse not to conduct the inspection within the 4-week time frame, end quote. DPS issues. Adjustments in a DPS environment may be implemented by using the Hempstead methodology, see memorandum from 1992, blah, blah, blah. Note that the Hempstead methodology is used for two separate purposes, to establish TE entitlement and to adjust routes in a DPS environment. In the unilateral process, management may use either the Hempstead methodology or the traditional M39 count and inspection procedures to implement route adjustments to capture DPS savings. In the X route process, the parties must agree to use the traditional M39 count and inspection process. Upon completion of such M39 count and inspections, the delivery unit may no longer use the Hempstead methodology to adjust routes. And there's citation here. Before the Hempstead methodology is used, management must first develop a final target percentage for each delivery unit. In the X route process, this percentage must be between 70 and 85%. Adjustments may occur when the target percentage has been reached and maintained for 2 weeks with a variance of no more than plus or minus 5%. There's citation here. When making Hempstead adjustments, the unit target percentage is applied to each individual route. Total DPS savings for the unit is the sum of the savings for the individual route. And there's citation here. 60-day reviews. The September 17, 1992 memorandum entitled Resolution of Issues Left Open by Mittenthal Award of July 10, 1992 provides that within 60 days of implementing the planned adjustments for future automated events, the parties will revisit those adjustments to ensure that routes are as near to 8 hours daily as possible. Both the planned adjustments and subsequent minor adjustments that may be necessary to ensure compliance will be based on the most recent route inspection data for the route. However, if the future event occurs after the 18-month time limit expires, a new mail count, route inspection, and evaluation must occur, unless the local parties agree otherwise. Adjustments required pursuant to the 60-day review should be implemented within the 60-day review period. The parties recognize, however, that adjustments within the 60-day review period may not be possible where there are valid operational circumstances which warrant an exception. When management asserts that valid operational circumstances warrant an exception to the 60-day period, it must submit a detailed written statement substantiating the assessed circumstances to the local union within 7 days following the expiration of the 60-day period. Disputes concerning the asserted operational circumstances will be resolved through the grievance arbitration procedure. And there's a citation here. No prohibition exists that restricts management from also conducting a one-day count in conjunction with the 60-day re-examination of planned adjustments. Special office mail counts, see M31 section 141.2, are conducted when management desires to determine the efficiency of a carrier in the office and cannot form the sole basis for route adjustments. The only time restraint imposed by the M39 is that the carrier must be given 1 day's advance notification. And there's a citation here. Case configuration. Upon implementation of DPS, local managers and union representatives jointly determine on a route-by-route basis which of the two currently approved casing work methods is the most efficient for a route. Chapter 5, Building Our Future by Working Together. Selection of a route's work method is by agreement of the local union and management and must be based on efficiency, taking into consideration the impact on street time as well as office time and the need for additional space and casing equipment. If the local parties cannot agree, the matter should be quickly forwarded to the parties at the national level for a joint resolution. See the March 21, 2000 Memorandum of Understanding on City Letter Carrier DPS Work Methods on JCAM page 41-50. The two currently approved work methods are vertical flat casing work method. The VFC allows for the casing of residual letters with vertically cased flats and carrying the combined flat / residual mail as a single bundle and carrying the DPS letters as a second bundle. Composite bundle work method. This allows for the casing and pulling down of residual letter mail separately and carrying it separately as a third bundle. The local parties are encouraged to develop efficient new work methods. If one is developed, it must be submitted to the national parties for evaluation of efficiency and approval prior to implementation. The VFC work method is not the one bundle system as found in section 222A of the M41. The one bundle system, the two bundle system, and the modified two bundle system are pre-DPS systems for casing and preparing mail. As noted above, when a delivery unit implements DPS, the local managers and union representatives must select one of the two approved work methods, whichever is most efficient. In non-DPS offices, the two-bundle system and modified two-bundle casing systems may be used with four or five shelf letter carrier cases. The use of the one-bundle system, on the other hand, on other than the standard six-shelf letter case requires joint agreement. The vertical casing of flats is an option in both non-DPS and DPS delivery units. When first introduced, the vertical casing of flats was implemented through a memorandum dated January 10, 1990, with accompanying guidelines that dealt with the number of shelves, 4, 5, or 6, and the prerogative of letter carriers to have input into the size and number of separations within the cases on their routes. Section 221.7 of the M41, March 1, 1998, provides the authority to configure flat cases for vertically cased flats using 4, 5, or 6 shelves. Casing accommodations. In his June 9, 1997 arbitration award in case blah blah blah, arbitrator Snow ruled that a city letter carrier on a park and loop route in a DPS environment who uses the composite bundle work method may not be required to work marriage mail behind addressed flats. While his award settled the, quote, fourth bundle, end quote, dispute over the handling of unaddressed flats on park and loop routes using the composite bundle work method on unaddressed flat days, it did not settle the issue of how unaddressed flats should be handled on the effective routes. Snow remanded this issue to the national parties for discussion and resolution. Note, while the arbitration award dealt only with park and loop routes, the parties agreed that the ruling also impacted foot routes and foot delivery portions of mixed routes. By memorandum dated August 12, 1997, the Postal Service and the NALC agreed to conduct a study to determine the relative efficiency of the composite bundle and vertical flat casing work methods with and without unaddressed flats. And there's a reference here to JCAM page 41-50. Pending the findings of the study, the memorandum instructed the local parties to select the most efficient approach for handling unaddressed flats on those park and loop and foot routes in a DPS environment for which the composite bundle work method has been selected. This was to be done by September 6, 1997. During this period, many delivery units were unable to agree on an accommodation for affected routes. As a consequence, by memorandum dated September 12, 1997, those offices without an agreement were instructed to meet again, avoid extreme positions, and try to reach a resolution on the accommodation issue on affected routes by September 26, 1997. Absent agreement by the local parties on that date, the memorandum stated that the national parties would impose a procedure for determining an interim approach. It additionally provided that until the local parties reached an agreement or began the resolution procedure specified by the national parties, the regular carrier on the route would determine the most efficient approach for handling unaddressed flats. On September 26, 1997, the USPS NALC procedure for determining interim approach was sent into the field. The document established a procedure to compare the efficiency of a carrier's selected approach to the efficiency of a baseline period, and was to be applied to each affected route on which the local parties had failed to reach an agreement. For each route, all time used on the route on the first 6 days unaddressed flats were delivered. After September 26, 1997, using the carrier's selected approach, including auxiliary assistance and overtime, would be averaged to determine the average daily total work hours used on the route on those days. This daily total would be compared to the average daily total work hours used on each of the 6 days unaddressed flats were delivered immediately prior to August 4, 1997. If the average daily total work hours using the carrier's selected approach did not exceed the average daily total work hours of the comparison period prior to August 4, 1997, the carrier would continue with that approach during the interim period as long as the same level of efficiency was maintained. If the comparison showed an increase in average daily total work hours with the carrier's selected method, the delivery unit manager and the shop steward were to review the data to determine whether the increase was the result of an increase in office or street time. If an increase in office time was not the result of an increase in volume, or if the street time increased for any reason, or the carrier's level of efficiency is not maintained during the interim period, management can select the approach for handling unaddressed flats for the remainder of the interim period. And thus ends section 41.3. Guys, we are getting so close. So, I'm going to keep at it. You guys keep listening, and I will catch you next time.